Wake up, you drunkards. Weep and howl about new wine, all you drinkers of wine, over the fact that your supply to the mouth has been cut off. That was Joel, chapter 1, verse 5. Little children, from the version of Yours Truly from 2003, our daily scripture for today. And if you would like, we will now resume our study from the article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express. The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express. And at the beginning of the article, there is a photograph of Yours Truly, right here, magnified, that is, and there's the full-size version of it, from this, let's see where this is from, it's from 2006, which was actually the same time when we were on this journey. I'm trying to see whether this is, oh, this is, I think I know where this photo was taken. In Trinity, I think. Do I say where it was taken? No, it doesn't say. It looks like it was taken. I'm not sure for sure. Wait a minute. No, this was taken in my house. This is taken in my house. I can recognize it. This is where it says percussion. That sign said on the wall behind the door, which was set up to be like a refrigerator door with the seals around it. For the drum room, the percussion room, and this is where a wall was removed in the hallway, and it's me standing in front of the in the percussion room, which was never used for percussion actually, but we had the possibility of putting the drums in that room, using it in that way. But there I am in that year, 2006. There's a picture that's going to come up somewhere at the end. Where is it? At the end of this chapter, we're going to see the tall ship picture, which was taken in Florida, which was that was taken in January, I think, sometime. Yeah, January 2006 on Treasure Island in Florida. I took the picture also of that tall ship, and it was a sunset picture, one of many sunset pictures, which resulted in, because we had 30 days with no rain, I took sunset pictures every day. It resulted, because the camera was not a single lens reflex, it was a direct view of the sun, and it resulted in me experiencing some loss of vision in that left eye for a while, which is seemingly coming back to haunt me a little bit now, later on in life. Although the vision loss that I suffered in 2006 seemed to just go away after that, but it was what looked like a dirty windshield as I was driving home from Florida with my late wife, Anne. I hate calling her my late wife, because, but I just to make it clear that she did pass away, I have to do that, I guess, but, I was driving home with Anne, and I noticed that it looked like there was mud on the windshield or something, and it turned out it was, when I got home, I had a blind spot sort of in my left eye, at least in dim light. And even now, I think it's never fully recovered. My right eye is much better. But no, actually, my left eye is very good. It's still my best eye, really, but it does have floaters. Actually, yeah, it's, my eyes are good right now compared. I'm taking this blueberry supplement, of course, which is a phenomenal kind of supplement or concentrate. It's a natural supplement, a concentrate of blueberries, which is good for the eyes. But anyway, I'm getting off topic again. In this there's a gravestone. Where's the gravestone? That photo of the gravestone doesn't appear here. It's curious. I intended it to, but his let's read his epitaph first. We can see the photo, but beneath, I'll show you in a minute, but it's not here. Beneath this stone, James Gooby's epitaph, okay? He is my fourth great-grandfather, the father of my third great-grandmother. Catherine Gooby was her name before she married John Green and became Catherine Green. And her father, James Gooby, is my fourth great-grandfather. His epitaph reads, and he died, look, in 1812. His epitaph reads, "Beneath this stone your shepherd's body lies, whose soul in heaven now tastes the fullest joys. Walk in his steps, his bright example view, so you in heaven will taste those pleasures too." That's what the gravestone said. We've got, this is the introduction link to the Green family history. There's the gravestone. It's the memorial in memory of James Gooby, who was pastor. Actually, it says, who was a Methodist pastor. I'm sure I have a fuller inscription and so on of it. Maybe we can see it. All these photos are actually visible when you mouse over. Officiated as pastor for 27 years. So this might say who was a can't quite make it out on that photo. But let's search it, yeah. In memory, officiated as pastor for 27 years. That was, it was a damaged gravestone. Somebody had broken the gravestone. But it was restored by let's see, not by me, certainly, but let's see. Restored by Alfred and Ella Gooby Bailey.
Jack Walter.
Evidently one of his descendants. That was a message, just warning me about the water distilling that I've actually unplugged, but I'll have to... We're going to get another message like that if I don't stop it. Let's see. Maybe I should stop that so we don't have to listen to that. They've all ended. Both timers have ended. Okay. We don't have to worry about that. Okay, so in memory... Here it is. Here's the gravestone. Native... Yeah, here's what the gravestone says. This is the better picture on the same page that had the... what's the word? the enhanced or artistically modified photo of the gravestone there, some kind of contrast and color modification to the photo. But this is the photo from which that was made, which is now shown with a special section highlighted showing that it says James Gooby, in memory of James Gooby, who was a native of Christ Church. And the part that said native of Christ Church was difficult to make out, but he was in fact a native of Christ Church. We know that from other records. And native of Christ Church in England. That's what it probably says. Christchurch in... It's not the Christchurch in New Zealand. It's the Christchurch in England. And it looks like we see the in, and then we see the letter E here. Traces of it. And there's the G in England right there. You see that coming down below? There's the bottom of the G. So that says Christchurch in England, evidently. We know he's from England, and we know he's from Christchurch, so it's perfectly logical. And after officiating, it says, as something, this is the part that says as pastor, to the church here for 27 years, died the 16th of January, 1812, yeah. So that's his, and then the poem about your shepherd's body lies, and so on. So that was a totally fragmented gravestone. Somebody destroyed it, or tried to destroy it, evidently. But we got pictures of it, and when did I take those pictures? That picture, when was that taken? I think it's probably, this is it here. Yeah, beneath this stone your shepherd's body lies. That's how the poem starts. But the year of this photo, I think it's possibly from the same year. We're talking about the same year, but I don't know. Can't really read that file name without all the right photo. See if we have it here. When did I take it? When did I take the photo? On one of our trips. What was that? Oh, yeah. We went back to the main... Here it is, the main document. Yeah, right. So, here's another version of it right here. There, it's much clearer. Native of Christ Church. Christ Church was the name of the city, but... in England, and you can almost see the word England there. So you can read this much more clearly on this more contrasted version. When was this picture taken? I'm sure I know from some other sources I can find out, but... Wow. My fourth great-grandfather. But, I didn't intend to go into all this depth. I just, what year was that photo taken? Maybe I can find out from this photo. Yeah, it's possible by looking at this. Fort Chill Cemetery. Yeah, 2006. There it is. August. August 2006. That was taken. Okay. Sounds right that we would have been traveling in the summer. So there we go. That's a much better rendition of the gravestone with the highlights still there just to show native of Christchurch. So, continuing our reading now. We're starting to read the paragraph, chapter 8, paragraph 12. Full on the subject of Peleg. Before we start, I better read this first, though, because I might not have time. If I have time at the end, I'll talk about my new sleeves that I've just gotten. They were too warm a moment ago. I had to take them off. But they're just, oh, they're incredible. Maybe I'll put them on right now, because they're just, my arms get kind of cold, you know. But I could put these are down. So I've got my down jacket with the sleeves cut off. It's this, I cut the sleeves off of it. And then I have the sleeves that I glued the ends of the sleeves so that the down doesn't keep falling out. And then I can wear these sleeves to keep my arms warm. And it's a phenomenal way. Prevents perspiration from making your jacket dirty. You can get a down jacket. If it fits too tight, you can cut the sleeves off it. Makes it fit a lot looser, and then you can use it as an indoor jacket, or maybe even as an outdoor jacket, and use it so that the sleeves can be separate from the vest, or from the jacket, which becomes a vest. And I also have two other vests that I've just bought that were without sleeves, but they arrived from, I think I mentioned it, Mountain Hardware, which was a company that Anne loved because of her softie that she wore, which was her jacket. So let's read 8 and 12, chapter 8, paragraph 12. Full on the subject of Peleg, an obvious similarity exists. An obvious similarity exists between the names of Peleg and Pelasgians. A similarity in name that is strengthened by the allocation mentioned above of the maritime region to Shem. Here, from part one of the Ark of Urartu, we saw Shem was given this maritime region, or the middle part of the earth, with the temperate climate. Not the south where all the heat was, which Ham was given, and not the north which Japheth was given, where it was cold, but the middle temperatures. Shem was given. The Mediterranean was included. The Mediterranean Sea was included, which is very maritime. Well, the Pelasgians are a group known as sea peoples, which fits, right, with the similarity between Peleg and Pelasgians, since Peleg was the descendant of Shem, one of them. And the phoenix or Bennu bird of the Egyptians was a stork. A stork, right? The stork is traditionally thought of as the animal, the bird that brings the babies in the mythological story sense. But the word Pelasgians itself resembles the Greek word for stork, transliterated in English Pelargos, in Greek spelled with the Greek alphabet. That's the Greek pi, which is the letter P, and then there's the Greek epsilon, which is E, lambda, which is L, alpha, which is A, rho, which is R, gamma, which is G, omicron, which is O, and what do they call S in Greek? I've forgotten what the name is for that letter in Greek. Strange. But anyway, C In Greek, the word sea is pelagos, one letter removed from pelargos, the stork. So there's quite a big similarity there, but otherwise they're identical, transliterated, as far as the word for sea goes. It's transliterated pelagos. Peleg, that's very similar to Peleg, isn't it? Peleg is born in 2749 BCE in the genealogy, which compares with 2747 for the death of Osiris or Narmer. That reminds me, I said the other day that Peleg was 30 years old when he had his son, but that's a Masoretic text, whereas the Greek Septuagint version, which we prefer as being the one used by the apostles of Christ, Jesus, and the, you know, the version that was remaining, an older copy, made from an older copy than the Masoretic text, evidently, which was something that was altered by the Jews, not necessarily because of Jesus, but because of a later sort of fake Messiah, or whatever you want to call him, a later Messiah, or would-be Messiah, right, who had arrived at that later time period, just after Jesus, at some point after Jesus, and so the Jews altered their text so that it wouldn't be the right time, because there were 5,500 years that were expected to pass from Adam before the Messiah would arrive, and so the Jews altered their scriptures in the Masoretic text so that it wouldn't look like the Messiah had arrived yet. And they did that by shortening the chronology so there was much less than 5,500 years. But the 2749 in the genealogy compares to 2747 BCE. But, yeah, Peleg was 130 in the Greek Septuagint when he had a son. So we're not seeking to correlate the son, who was called Reu, and his name meant friend, with the time of the Tower of Babylon, I was mentioning it in that context to see if we could correlate. But of course, he was just naming him friend in memory of, he remembered the Tower of Babel in some way by calling his son Reu, which meant friend. That was, I think, the meaning that I originally had thought of, knowing at the time that our chronology showed that Peleg was born in 2749. And he wasn't old enough to have a son in 2747, which would be sometime near the time of the Tower of Babel. And Osiris was also possibly called Narmer. The death of Osiris was in 2747 BCE, 2 years after the birth of Peleg. So the time of the Tower of Babel was said to be during the days of Peleg, where in his days it said the earth was divided. That's how it put it. And we know that the confusion of languages happened during the time of the Tower of Babel. And that divided the earth. It caused it to be... The people were confused, and then the earth was divided into different nations after that. To end on an Egyptian note, Narmer is, by the mainstream Egyptological consensus... those are big words. Narmer is by the mainstream Egyptological consensus claimed as identical to Menes. When I traced the Green family history on my visit in 2006 to Old Perlican, there's the date of the picture, Newfoundland, Old Perlican is a part of, I found out that a quaint story connected Perlican and Pelican. And I guess the similarity of pelicans to storks makes the case prima facie, that my inspiration for doing this historic compare with Stork, this historic research. My inspiration for doing this historic research was wanting to know, although we would say historic research, was wanting to know for sure what the actual origin of the name Old Pelican is. Yeah, that was one of my reasons for doing this, all this research, right? About my family was, I wanted to know what's the origin of this name, Old Pelican. That was one of the things involved in it. Not really, I guess, the only reason at all, because my family history was involved. But the Old Pelican class lists, a list that I consult and that I photographed digitally in 2006. Yeah, I photographed it extensively. Like, in 2006, I took all these pictures we found in that same, on that same journey. We found the, somewhere, it might be here. There it is. We found, this is the, not the, you have to reverse the video, colors. You have to reverse the, invert the colors to get the way it really looked. But it looked like that, with the colors back, but that, since that's too bright for a lot of people to look at, if they have vision impairment, we're going to look at the other one, which is the negative version of it. And we see in 1923 on this list, at the top it says, Old Pelican Circuit, 1823. Yeah, 1823, which is 100 years before 1923, which was such a significant date in our chronology, even in the modern day, 1923 and 1923 BCE. They were both important dates. And here we have 1823, and we see that in this list, this is the, it begins with, this is Pelican, Old Pelican. There was a brother, John Green, who taught a class in Old Pelican, and he might be the same John Green who was my third great-grandfather, who married Catherine Gooby. Very possible. In fact, this is his handwriting on this list, but we can see that from his marriage license signature, or his marriage record, I should say, signature. But we also see the handwriting of his wife, Catherine Gooby, here. Immediately after Grace Strong, we see the handwriting changes to a much neater style. And it goes down and up to the next line, and the next column, all the way from Anne Strong. So she evidently knew everyone in Old Pelican, because she was from Old Pelican. And so this is her handwriting, evidently. It looks exactly like, well, it's a different handwriting. And there's how she wrote Catherine. Right? Catherine Woodlands, Catherine Busey, and then she wrote, so we can compare those Catherines with something else here. Her marriage license signature. Her marriage certificate, I mean her marriage record. On her marriage record, she wrote her name, Catherine, at the very bottom of the page. So it's very hard to write at the very bottom of a page, but there she wrote Catherine. And her name was Gooby before she was married to John Green. But there's the G with the loop on it. And we've got Catherine like that. Look at that Catherine. Compare it to these Catherines, which are not at the bottom of the page. And also, this was 1823. This is 5 years after her marriage, so she had time to practice her writing in those 5 years. But that looks like it's not the same handwriting as the person who then resumes writing below here, who's, we believe it's John Green. That's why his wife wrote here along with him in that year, 1823. And his handwriting matches his writing on his same marriage record as the one that Catherine Gooby signed. But we're not going to go into that today. But his, that John Green is very similar. This writing right there is extremely similar to the marriage record of John Green, but I'm sure all of that is recorded in those other, on those other pages or somewhere I've shown it. But it's remarkable that I found this document in the Methodist, in the church, in the United Church, in St. John's, and the Methodist became the United Church later on. Used to be the Methodist Church, and then became the United Church. So the records were kept in the United Church, and I found this book with the handwriting of my third great grandfather and my third great grandmother. Remarkable discovery. And then I documented the whole book. Like, this whole book is here. Like, you can go make it smaller. You can see, we can scroll. I've got, oh, it's like many pages of records, and I have the transcribed versions below with, you know, I deciphered what all the names were on every single page of this book, and some of them were hard to read too. But that's the story. And so I photographed digitally this book in 2006, and these lists, called the Old Perlican class lists, it lists, this particular list, it's called a list, I guess, or the plural could be used, but it's singular, it's a list also, but it lists the Methodist classes on the Old Perlican circuit during the time 1821 to 1846 of the Common Era in Old Perlican, Newfoundland, and included the names, and I believe the writing, of my third great-grandfather John Green, as also of his wife Catherine, the granddaughter of James Gooby of Old Perlican. Wait a minute, why did I say the granddaughter? Oh, yeah, she, that's right, she wasn't the daughter, she was a... So he's, James Gooby's my fifth great-grandfather, that's correct. Correction. He's my fifth great-grandfather. Her father was a Gooby, who was the son of the James Gooby, who died in 1812. And she was married in 1818, and he died at a fairly old age, of course. And he died before she was married in 1818. But I noticed just now that I do have a copy of it on my desk. And actually right now I did pull it out. I do have a copy of it right here. This is the Old Perlican class lists, all the way through. Okay, that's it for today's study. It's December 7th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 15:30 hours, Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. Thank you so much for listening and watching. I love you very much, and on my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star. I can barely get my sleeve up. Saying bye for now. And that was the end of chapter 8, paragraph 12 of chapter 8 today.